Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
How many people in church today? My colleague, the Reverend Dr. Carl Scovel, who served our congregation just across the common at King's Chapel for more than 30 years, once mused about the way folks asked him what seemed like a simple question. How many people in church today? Carl reflects, I have a bad memory for figures. I stand for a moment a little confused and finally say, I don't know, maybe 100, maybe more. I pause, maybe less. I remember feeling that this figure was not impressive, that I did not sound successful. He goes on to say, I walked on wondering why people so often ask me that question. Do they wonder if I'm including the choir and the ushers, assistant minister when I'm feeling desperate? And what does it mean anyway? He goes on to realize that if he really counted everyone who was in church that day, and then also those who had been there 25 years earlier, and all those who had come and gone, and the ancestors from before his time who were memorialized on the walls and in the endowments and in the artifacts that bore their names, that would be a lot of people. For us, it would be the donors of the Tiffany windows, the people memorialized on them, the Honeywell family who built this building, the many hearts and minds that have kept the George White House, the bells intact, kept the congregation running, the Unitarian greats, William Ellery Channing and Frederick Frothingham and Dana Greeley and Jack Mendelson, and of course, the many beloveds we have lost from among us, Art Judge, Doc Kinney, Don Richter, Jean Monahan, and again, George Whitehouse. You get the idea. And then there are the musicians whose songs lift us up and carry us forward. If we listed all of them, we'd be here all day. And maybe we should. Then there are the loved ones each of us has lost, who we'll name later in today's service, who come with us really wherever we go, but sometimes more than others. Today, I bring with me my father, who died 7 years ago and would have turned 94 last Thursday. Who do you bring? How might we count them? Carl concludes his reflection by saying the answer he has to give to that question. How many people in church today? Thousands. That cloud of witnesses, he concludes, keeps us sane and reminds us of the source of our faith and our hope. Soon, here at Arlington Street, we'll be able to offer a resting place for the ashes of members of and friends in the form of a columbarium in the front vestibule, the visionary gift from David Gennaro and Jeffrey Thompson. The cloud of witnesses will then draw closer than ever. We will name them and see them regularly. In this season, when the veil between the worlds is thin, we have a delicious opportunity to revel in the ways that the loved ones we lost are with us still. We invite and celebrate the gifts of those who may never have set foot in this church, but who have come with us today in blessed memory. Those we cannot think of as dead, because they are very much with us still. The writer Catherine Schultz has always been averse to euphemisms for death, she says. To say someone has passed away or is no longer with us or departed felt to her like odd ways to help us hide from the fact of death. Until she was surprised to find herself, after her father died, saying, I lost my father. So she looked up the root word of the word lost and found that the earliest meaning of it was actually to perish or despair, to be cut off. And our ideas of losing things, losing our minds, losing our hearts, losing our selves in love were actually evolutions from that original meaning associated with death. A separation, being cut off, divided. In the freshness of grief, we are gobsmacked by the fact that the person we love and know in daily life, for their quirks and their gifts and their touch and their smile, all the layered facts of their person are yanked from us. Who are we without them? Can it be real? Any of us who has lost a loved one knows that special kind of sharp pain. The instant disorientation at having the person no longer there, the disbelief that shows up when we can find ourselves continuing to talk to them, to imagine their reactions, to prepare a place for them at the table, to fluff their pillow. And then to realize they won't be coming to eat, to sleep, to laugh at that joke, to appreciate the way the flowers are arranged ever again. The sense of living in two worlds after a loss, of there being a separation between the world before and those who seem to be going about their lives blissfully ignorant of the fact of death, and those deep in the low. How can we navigate between the two? How do we know that we can work through the why of loss while living with the living? Nothing makes sense in the freshness of grief, which may explain how I found myself in a very fancy boutique the day after my father died, contemplating the purchase of a $350 handbag that I didn't need and definitely couldn't afford. If I wasn't any longer my father's daughter, as I felt in that moment, who was I? Maybe I was suddenly a very fancy lady. Thankfully, before I swiped my credit card, I realized, literally looking in the mirror in the store, that was not for me, that retail therapy was not going to soothe my pain. Over time, the discombobulation gives way to riding sort of side saddle with loss, knowing how to dip into the land of the, we pretend that doesn't happen here, just enough to get by, and also knowing when to let in all of the tears and the sadness, or the knowing smiles that we wish for from our beloved who's passed. At those inside jokes we will never share in the same way with another. And then there's the living with all of it, the sudden moments of remembrance in the midst of daily life that catch you unaware, the sense of a close presence, even when you are a firm believer in no afterlife, the waft of their scent hitting you while you're doing the dishes or mowing the lawn. How can that be? And eventually, we do find that at every turn, those we have lost are still with us. We just get better at knowing how to manage in the world with them in our hearts rather than in our arms. My father now looks over my shoulder as I cut fruit and vegetables, making sure I'm not wasteful of any edible parts as I cut off stem or separate watermelon flesh from rind. He rants at me about the state of the world, and I rant right back. Ali Parsa is deepest in my heart as I read or recite or listen to poetry, the one language in which we understood each other. The poet David White beautifully describes this journey of moving through the pain of loss to the accompaniment of grief in his poem Requiem. He's driving away from attending the death of a dear friend. He writes, "I suddenly felt the pure note of you in me, a pitch that had me held and quiet as if the choir that had sung unheard in me these last days had touched at last the held note that leaves a chapel silent, so that the stones and the rock and the walls and the clear austerity of prayer surrounding me seemed like an ally and a friend at last. No landscape to overcome, but my home and rest, so that though I drove away from you through a land you knew and that you wouldn't want to leave, I felt as if you were looking with me. Though I left you, you were coming with me. As if my life lay not on one side of your going or the other, but here in the pained and pilgrim present. As if we still had an arm around each other, you in the light and me in the dark, taking turn and turn again to help each other see our breath pluming together in the cold air of the car, as we sat together as we had before, prayerful, parallel inhabitants of an onward way, not hallowed by the power of distance. T.S. Eliot famously described hell as a place where nothing connects with nothing. The worst possible outcome of our lives is to feel disconnected and abandoned, not just in death, but in life. Our purpose is to know our connection, though it might change form and not be visible to the naked eye. The journey of grief may never end, but living with us, it opens us up to the realization that, as Buddhist sages teach us, our separation is, in fact, an illusion. Our connection simply changes form, and it is ours to notice the shape it will take next. And once we see those other shapes of connection, we open ourselves to honoring them in others, all of those we carry with us all the time. Our feelings of loss are entirely because we have loved, and that love is never lost. In fact, the fierceness and the tenderness of our love are meant to continue to magnify as we remember our loved ones and hold them close. And in their absence, we learn to share that love anew. May we let ourselves, my friends, be held in love, open our hearts to offering a love that never ends. If grief is its inevitable companion, and if we let it, it opens us up to more love, stronger connection, and wider compassion, then let it be so. Amen. Spirit of life and love of grief and its wisdom, hold us in our unknowing, in our pain, in our sadness, in our anger, in our yearning, in our joy, and in our celebrations. Help us to know that each feeling is a bid for connection, a remembrance of the love that holds us, and a path toward what can heal us. Let our remembrance today open our lives to deeper truth, tether us more fully to one another and to the wider compassion for those in this world and beyond it. Go in peace, in love and service. The service begins when the service ends. Amen.
People are my people. Your people.
We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.